This is the Better Cinematographer podcast. I'm Carter Hewlett, and this is episode number 5. 5 days later than this episode is supposed to be out, but we're here, and I apologize for keeping you waiting. On this episode of the show, I have a chat with producer Alex Pescosta. Alex is a freelance producer. He works on music videos and commercials, mostly in Europe and the UK. It was rad to sit down with him and learn a little bit more about the producer life and what he has to deal with and the stuff that we don't necessarily see or hear about as cinematographers, or sometimes just as filmmakers in general. I will keep this intro as short as possible, and I'll catch you guys on the other side. Enjoy. Alex, welcome. Is it all the way from America, or all the way from the little village in Germany?
This time it's all the way from America. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate you inviting me.
Yeah, no problem.
Congratulations for the success you're having for this new podcast.
Thanks, man.
Great idea.
Thank you. For everybody listening, just talk to me about what it is you're doing right now and your journey to get there.
I'm a film producer, but I really love to produce commercials too and music videos, which is something I've been exploring in the last months more and more. I'm a huge country music fan, so I would love to produce country music videos in the future. I've produced rock music videos in South Tyrol back home and here in London, and commercials we're doing a lot too in Berlin for the company called Cela Watt, for which I'm a producer for. We're doing medium to big budget commercials for cars and bigger companies, but end game and my life's end game is going to be producing feature films for a global audience, for sure.
Talk to me about how you first started, or how you got into the industry, because you studied producing here, didn't you, in London?
Yeah, I grew up in my hometown, Ortisei, Italy. For me, the best place in the world. I did my middle school, my high school there. I studied languages and tourism. But from there, I knew I wanted to study and improve my filmmaking skills also academically. But I didn't want to just go to a very specific film school. I wanted to have a broader education in media. So I did a bachelor's in media arts in Plymouth, at Plymouth University, which was a really great time. Plymouth is such a beautiful place. We had great teachers, we had great classmates, and it was just a great time. One point that for me was very important was to improve my English. I wasn't really good at it back in high school. I was actually struggling with it. And for some reason, I knew that to improve as a filmmaker, I also had to improve my English, and so I decided to do both together, to study filmmaking and media arts and English together. And so I decided to go for a British university, which the system here is great, and the universities are top class in the world, and so I'm very happy I did that. And after Plymouth, I went, that's when I realized in those years that producing, which I'm very happy we'll get to talk about today, was what I like to do the most. And so I did a Master of Arts in Film Producing at Royal Holloway, University of London, here in the city.
So you finished film school and you got this Master's in Producing. Did you come out of there and be like, yeah, I'm producing now and this is it, like I've made it? Or what's the graft? Like, how did you start to get work producing once you'd finished? And where as well? Did you stay in London or did you go back home to try and work?
I don't think that there's actually a moment where you're like, I'm ready to produce now. Like it is with filmmaking, I think you need to learn by doing as much as you can. A lot of people say that you don't need a film school. Others say that you need a film school. That's why I tried to, and I went for a media arts program first, because it gave me a broader understanding of audio animation, photography, and video and filmmaking. And from there, I went down to a specific master's then in producing. Right at the end of my master's in producing at Royal Holloway, we had to produce a short film, which I produced in Berlin, because I knew that production costs would be lower. There's a great crew there, just like in London, but the production costs are definitely lower. And so I went there, built up some really good, we had a really good team of people that was a part of this project. We shot a really good short film. And from there, I just got more opportunities in Berlin. I sent CVs around, which is maybe something that might interest your audience, how to get more work as a producer. CVs don't usually work. It's very important to have a personal connection with people. And so what I realized, just learning by doing, really, in terms of networking, is that one conversation with a person in a bar or in an office or in a production company's office is way more valuable than 50 CVs sent by email to some random people that you've never met and that never met you. And so I tried to go to different networking events for creative people, but also specifically for filmmakers. And that gave me a few really good contacts. And from these contacts, I got different job opportunities. And the most important one was from, which is now a really good friend, Eugen May in Berlin, from Selawat, which is a production company in Berlin that does really good work. And they gave me the chance to be their producer since then. And so I'll always be grateful. And that kind of like gave me the confidence to keep on working on networking and getting my name out there. And that's, I think, the best way for a producer to get new work.
And you're still doing that now, aren't you? Like your process of trying to meet new people is exactly the same.
Yes, it's just always bigger and I hope better and more elaborated. I hope also more personal, because once you get that confidence to be like, this is me, I love to work with like-minded, ambitious, motivated people. The people out there, there's a lot of really good filmmakers out there that just wait to connect with you. So the best thing that we as filmmakers can do is reach out and connect and be ready to collaborate with others, especially in other countries, because that gives you a huge amount of new inputs from different cultures and traditions and parts of the world that you never heard or seen before. And that just completes you as a filmmaker and makes you a better filmmaker in general. And in your case, a better cinematographer.
If you were going to explain to someone who has nothing to do with film,
mm-hmm.
and they said, what do you do for a living? Like, you know, just the fundamentals of your job as a producer and what it involves.
The fundamentals of producing, producing doesn't really have a definition. And producers often get asked, so what is it that you do? On one of my last film sets, some people were asking me, so what is actually the difference between a director and a producer? There are huge differences, but they're often not clear. So my view on this, my answer to that question, is usually you got to be a problem solver, first of all. You got to have to love to be with people and to work with people. You have to be a team player. You have to be a leader. You have to have that sensitivity you have to care about people, I think, especially about your crew, because they're not working. I think they're not working for me, they're working with me, and that gives me it just makes me care about them. I want to make sure that they have everything they need to do a good job, but at the same time, as you know, as a producer, you need to you need to respect the budget you have too from the people that give you the money to shoot something. And so you got to balance the needs of your crew, and especially of the creative needs of your director, with the budget and the limitations you have.
I think there's actually like quite a bit of mystery to producing and being a producer. At least for me, I think there is, and I imagine there is for a lot of people. I mean, we already kind of briefly spoke about this. You're in charge of the budget. You're in charge of the money. You're responsible. You're tasked with creating the film or the music video or whatever it is. And you're given the money to do that. And then it's your job to kind of figure out where to put that money and how to distribute that money to get it, to get the job done, right?
Sure. And another thing I wanted to say is that I appreciate you asking me these questions, and you're actually interested in how producing works and how producers think, because it's very often just overlooked. And often the crew is very disconnected on what the producer actually has to do to make things happen, just like finding the finance, solving the problems behind the scenes that not many people know, but the producers listening will exactly know how many sleepless nights one has to solve problems that on shooting day are not there anymore. But it's not because of magic, it's because the producer with the director often and with his team solved those problems before. So I think that's very important that you're actually interested to hear the producer side of things. And to answer your question about finance, obviously producing, like all professional filmmakers, it is a job, so you need to be able to make a living out of it. We're all professionals, and part of us is freelancing. Like, I'm freelancing right now, so I'm going from project to project. What I like about it is that there's always a new challenge. There's also always another kind of budget and another size of production, and so every time you have new challenges on how to build up that budget, how to create that budget, how to manage it. What are the clients' expectations, for example? What are the clients' creative needs? What would that client like to have on screen? What can we not have on screen to save money? A lot of producing is also saving money, finding money where there is no money. I think the best way to do that is to have clear numbers from the beginning, from the client or the production company that hires you as a producer, is to know the budget that you have there to work with. If you have clear numbers, you can work in a much more efficient and better way.
Okay, so when it comes to the DP and the director, how often does the director bring their own DP or suggest that they want to work with their own DP compared to how often you're tasked with kind of offering them options of cinematographers? Like, what's the kind of ratio?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think it, first of all, really depends what are you shooting and where. I've heard of the American system where the director always or very often has the task to choose a producer, especially for commercials and the music videos. The client or the label for a specific artist goes straight to the director or to his agent, and then the director choose one of the producers he wants to work with. In Europe, specifically in Italy and in Germany, there's often the right opposite, where the company would go to a production company and have that production company, through its producer, choose a director that reflects the vision that the client wants for his project. Obviously, every case is different, but that's how I see it at the moment. I've had projects where I had the chance to choose a director that I liked. And obviously, I like that because it gives me a decision to take. I love taking decisions, love taking responsibility. And I think there are some really good directors out there, which I'd love to work more in the future. And I can't wait to have them on my projects. On others, like we were saying, they call me, a director calls me and asks me to produce for him or for her a specific project.
And then what's the deal with when it comes to the DP?
Right, sorry, I forgot the DP in a DP-based podcast.
That's all good. I mean, I think we're establishing that this is quite a broad cinematography podcast.
The thing about a DP, like we were saying before, is that often a director loves to work with a very specific DP, and they work together very often. What I like to do as a producer is to mix things up a bit, and to get a DP I think is really good with a director that I think is really good. And it's just like introducing two friends that you know are going to get along. Mm. That's something I really enjoy as a producer. I hope that my other fellow producers do too, is connecting different crew people together that you know are going to work well together, like a DP and a director. And one of the biggest joys of the job is when you're actually building up a crew, starting from the DP and the director, and then on set you see them working together and just sharing ideas and just enjoying working together. For you as a producer, that's one of the best feelings.
If we're going by the European kind of situation, who's going through the treatments? If you're choosing directors, are you reading the treatments and you have the final say and send them to the client? What's the who's calling the shots on the treatments? Is that, are you doing that?
What would usually happen in, let's say in Germany, they would reach out to different production companies to have treatments written. And at Silawad, we have a director that, in-house director, writes these treatments. And then if it's a bigger budget, they would choose a production company based on the treatment that they sent in. Mm-hmm. Same with commercials. While for smaller stuff, they might as well ask just several directors to send treatments in. So it really depends from the project. There's no standard procedure. And that's one of the good things about it, is that you can do it in different ways. But as a director, writing skills and treatment writing skills are hugely important, for sure.
That's the huge part of a director's job, isn't it? Just,
yeah.
If you're not on set, you're writing a fucking treatment.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you, as a producer, or even the companies that hire you, how much do they care about the kind of status of the DP, like whether they have representation or whether they're just like totally freelance and have no representation? Because I've always been curious about that and how much it affects how employable somebody is. If you get somebody who is repped and they have an agent, do you feel like there's some kind of security in getting them because they've got this like seal of approval and there's kind of people behind them, rather than just having like someone like myself that isn't repped and I'm just, if I fuck up, it's on me.
Why not?
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. What's the, I mean, does it make a difference to you, or are there people that do care? And if they do care, why and what causes that?
First of all, obviously, these are all my opinions. It is not how it is.
Yeah. Well, in your experience then,
In my experience, it doesn't really matter if the DP has an agent or not, or is repped or not. What matters is that you can talk and have a very frank and honest and creative conversation with the actual DP, that they're open to discuss different ideas with the director, obviously, but also with you as a producer. The agents are hugely important in what they do. Their profession is very important, because they take a huge weight off the shoulder from the DPs and the directors and help them with scheduling, finding new jobs, the whole financial side. So if a DP that I talk to for a specific project has an agent, it just tells me that he's busy, that he has a lot of work coming in, that agent believes in him, that there is some kind of, like you said, seal of approval, and that we're talking about a more professional relationship. But there's plenty and a big number of DPs, like every other creatives, that have no agents and that are just as good or even better than the ones that have. So you can never really judge a DP based on if he has an agent or not. It's about his talent, it's about his will, motivation, ambition, and skill with light and the camera. So it does really make a big difference for me. But producing and managing the crew and getting a DP on the project, it always helps if there is an agent that is like the intermediate between me and the DP.
So it does help. Is it ever a hindrance? Like, for example, if I was repped and you reached out to me about a project and I just went talk to my agent, are you still going to be like, okay, I'll talk to his agent? Or are you going to be like, well, nah, I don't want to do that. I want to talk to the person. I want to get to know you as well.
For sure. I think that a DP or director or every person that has an agent should never forget to have a direct communication with the people that they want to work with, or they want to work with them. The common phrase that producers hate is "talk to my agent." They love to have a very direct communication with the people that they're going to work with. So my advice to the DPs is always to be very straightforward and honest and frank with the producer, and have the agent discuss the details. And something that they should never forget, like no creative should ever forget, is that filmmaking is not a one man's show. It's definitely collaborative. It's probably one of the art forms that is the most collaborative. And so we're all in one project together. And it's very important that from the beginning, the DP shows that he's a team player and that he wants to be a part of the team and that he's not just sending his agent to talk to the producer. He should actually make an effort to be there for the producer and the director from the beginning. I know especially DPs are very requested and very busy, but producers really care about that connection and personal connection that they're having, that they're going to have with people that they want to work with.
He or she, for the female.
He or she,
not just
so
he.
Really great female DPs out there.
Yeah, for sure. I just noticed that on a lot of these episodes, people are still referring to the DP as a he. So I want to say he or she.
Exactly.
So we spoke a little bit about pre-production. We kind of established that it's your job to kind of make the film or the music video happen with however much budget you're given, mm-hmm. and distribute that accordingly. What's the biggest challenge of your job that we don't necessarily hear about or see or have to deal with, but that may affect our job?
The biggest challenges are for sure the financing side. How are you going to find that money? Who is paying for it? How much money you have for this project? Is it enough or not to do what the director wants to do? But there's also a lot of psychology in the producer work. And often a good production, compared to one that doesn't go so well, really comes down to personal interactions you have with the people you work with. So often the challenge is to understand the director, understand the executive producer that you work for and with, understand the DP, understand the cast, and make sure they have everything they need, but at the same time respect the budget. So that's one of the biggest challenges, is to make everyone happy, but also to keep the limitations you have, the financing limitations, and to respect the budget.
Okay, that's interesting. That's a really good term, actually, respect the budget. You're saying, I mean, that's for you to do, respect the budget, but I guess everyone has to do that one way or another. Whether they know what the budget is or not, they still have to do that.
Yeah, something fellow producers will understand is you do feel kind of alone often as a producer, because the heads of the departments manage their department, but they know that if something goes wrong, they're reaching out to the producer and they're like, okay, can you solve this for me? There's this that came up. Can we get more money? We don't have anybody we can go to, talking about smaller to medium projects, to ask for help or to ask to solve the situation for us. Often we feel like we're that last person that actually needs to find that solution. So you'll find a lot of producers that don't sleep, that don't eat until they got that problem solved. Others just work all day on something that might sound insignificant for others, but securing a location, finding the right prop for that scene, which the art department can find, and you need to jump in and find some guy in another town that has that prop to bring back on set on the right day for the shoot. There's often personal problems. Maybe the actor or the actress has some personal problems she can't attend a rehearsal, and you need to try to deal with that. Maybe the equipment list that the DP sent in, maybe you forgot something on the list. Maybe you added something that isn't really needed. So you need to follow everything. You need to have an eye on the whole production, which is tough. It's one of the biggest challenges. You always need to be reachable. You always need to be ready to call somebody back to answer. You can't just throw your phone in a corner and be like, I'll talk to you tomorrow, which sometimes will be very nice. Or just take a month off and travel through Wyoming. Like I always say, I want to do at some point is leave my phone and my computer home and just travel without notifications and without my phone rings. So that's pretty tough too. In the end, it all comes down, like I was telling you, it's problem solving at its finest. And the problems always come up the day before the shoot for some reason. Guaranteed, there's always unplanned problems that come up in every production. That's why you have a producer there. That's one of the reasons that makes a good producer, is if you're a good problem solver and you find creative ways to solve that problem, that really helps the production, that makes you a better producer.
In regards to your relationship with the cinematographer, yes, what do you look for? Like, what are you looking for in that kind of working relationship in pre-production and on set?
Well, first of all, it depends what you're shooting and where you're shooting. Got some really good DP friends here in Europe and in America. Different countries work different ways. And the producer to DP relationship is different too, based on the country and on the project. But what I'm looking for from the beginning, like I was saying, the other question was directness, honesty, understanding the concept. When the DP has talked to the director and they have a common vision on what they want to do, I always like to get a very rough idea on an equipment list, understand what the DP thinks he needs to shoot that scene the best he can. There's always a creative conflict between what the creative, in this case the DP, wants and what the producer can give him. Mm-hmm. And so equipment lists always need to be, I like to see them as the final equipment list should be the perfect balance between what the DP and the director want and what the production can actually afford to get.
Okay, this is great, because this is something I wanted to kind of go into more detail with. I imagine it varies on the project, mm-hmm, and probably your relationship you have with the DP.
Yeah.
But do you, in the early stages, do you give them if you've already allocated a budget, do you say, this is how much you've got, send me a list? Or do you have them send you a list and then you kind of do a bit of back and forth there to kind of fine tune it?
It varies. Smaller projects can have a very clear and direct budget from the beginning, while bigger ones, where the budget changes, because often productions have more money coming in, or in the bad cases, they have money cut from the budget. So you always need to have that flexibility. And the DP, it's always great if the DP has that flexibility to understand the production and the producer's needs, to adapt his equipment list to the budget. And producers always appreciate if they see that kind of like availability and flexibility to just adapt to what the financial situation is.
I mean, what happens when there's something that the cinematographer considers absolutely essential and you're just there like, you don't know where to get more money from, and the director and the DP are like, yes, we need these anamorphics and we're not going to do it without them, and there's just like, you almost feel like your hands are tied. Like, how do you kind of work around that?
That happened plenty of times. It happened recently too. You just kind of make it work. Like, they don't care how are you going to do it. They just want those anamorphic lenses on that shoot. And if you're able to do that, then great, good job, producer. If you don't, then they're going to blame you for it. In general, people are very understanding. But for sure, if you can get them what they want, and if there's something, like you were saying, specific thing that they really want to have, you pretty much need to make it work. That means cutting other costs. One of the first things you do is see where you're wasting money, if there's money you don't need to spend, get that one in for the things you really need. A very important part of the budget and budgeting is actually allocating money where it is really needed and taking it from where it is not. So that's how I would finance a certain thing you would ask me as a DP, is, okay, let me move this money from here to there, and that way we can afford that specific lens, that specific camera for one more day, or whatever it is that would make the whole production better.
pre-production is handled, what's your relationship with the DP like when you are on set?
Shooting day is what we're all looking forward to. I think it's the most exciting day because you finally get to shoot what you were preparing to shoot and to make happen. So I love to see DPs working because I just admire how good they are with light and with the camera and stuff. I give up my camera cinematography skills some time ago because I realized I'm better at producing, but I think DPs are artists, and especially in bigger productions, when you see how they shape the light, it's just spectacular, and I love watching them working. I try to disturb them as little as I can. I can say I've never interfered with a DP's work because it's not my job. Especially on shooting day, you got everything you need on that set. That is your job then. I don't have to interfere as a producer. If there's anything that I would want to, for example, on one of my short films, there was the TV brand still in the shot, and I wanted that brand to get be covered. So I talked to the AD to have him talk to the director and the DP and to arts to get that brand covered up. The good thing about the producer is we're standing in the back. We often see things that you don't see because you have the screen right there. And so we try to be supportive, and maybe if there's something that we see that you forgot, we'll just try to communicate it, but in a very professional way, and for sure not while shooting. It will be in during a break, or just trying to be a third eye or an extra pair of eyes to help the DP too if it's needed.
No, it's definitely good to have that, because sometimes we're just so involved in what we're doing and what's in the frame overall that it can be quite easy, especially when you're moving really quickly, it can be quite easy to just miss something that's like so minor. But when it's finished and it's shot, it's actually really important. Let's just talk a little bit about the kind of relationship building. How does a DP get on your radar? If someone's trying to find work or they're trying to meet new producers and make new connections, how would someone get on, not your radar specifically, but just a producer in general? What would you say is like a good way to kind of make a connection?
You asking me how I meet, I find them, or how they should find
producers? I mean, do you have, because I message producers. I reach out to producers if I watch a project and I think it's like a super cool project, I'll reach out. Because it's producers and directors that put a DP to work.
Yeah.
So do they reach out to you? Do you get cinematographers kind of getting in touch with you?
I do, yeah. I do now and more, and I see it as a positive thing because they want to work with me, and so that's very welcoming. What I like to do is going to short film festivals, video festivals, also especially independent stuff, and I like to watch different kinds of works of videos and films and short films and write down the names of DPs I really like. So I would always have something with me, and I would write down the names of crew, but especially DPs that I liked, and I would check their work out online later, and if I liked that too, I would get in contact with them and be like, just like with you, I really enjoyed your work on Instagram, and I saw you shot some really cool stuff, and so I thought to reach out, and I was like, this is actually a person that I would want to work with in the future.
I've heard of producers, or maybe it's not the producer, maybe it's the brand, but somewhere in that kind of back end that they're looking for. I've heard of actors, production looking for actors that have a big following. Mm-hmm. They have a big following on Instagram. And I've heard of cinematographers being like it's a desirable trait for them to have a big following. Have you had that? Because it doesn't seem that, like if you have a big following, great. But if your work sucks, then...
Exactly. You just answered your question.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I just wondered if you'd ever been in that situation where someone's saying, we want an actor with X amount of followers, or we want, you know, I do sort of get it as it's marketing. Because if they've got a huge following, then those influencers / actors or whatever, they will post and it will be more traffic and more attention on the project. But have you ever had that?
With actors, for sure. Like as a producer, one of the things you learn in time and also at school, film school, is that the actual cast brings a lot in terms of marketing to a project. If we're talking about a cinematographer, DP, I personally don't care much if they have a big following or not. If there's a DP I really like the work of, and I see that they have a big following, it's just like another, I'd say, confirmation, another proof that my choice to choose that guy was good or that girl was good. So that's how I see it. I would never choose a DP just based on followers. Also because probably some of the best DPs don't even have Instagram.
Yeah, they're too busy working.
Exactly. I know new era, new technologies and stuff, but going back some years, and especially at the beginning of filmmaking, there was no social media, no nothing. So it is what you're doing with the camera and with the light that matters, and not how popular you are on Instagram. Yeah.
And I guess if Instagram disappears tomorrow, all you have is your website.
Yeah.
And who the fuck goes and looks at websites?
Yeah.
Well, like, I know for a fact how many people look at mine every month, and it's not a lot.
All you have is your work, really, and what you shot and how well you got along with the people you worked with. If a DP goes along with people, that's a huge plus. Like, you want to work with people that you get along with and that are just nice and warm and easy to talk to and understanding. That's the dream list, right? But you definitely want to work with people that you get along with and that you enjoy spending time on set and off set with.
And would you say that, given the choice, you would go for someone who maybe their work isn't as good? Say you've got two DPs, right? One of them is very well known. You know, maybe they've won awards and they've got a bit of hype around them, but they're a bit of a dick.
Mm-hmm.
But you know they'll do a good job, but they're a bit of a dick. Or there's someone...
It's a dangerous question.
Or there's somebody who's maybe not as good. They're still a good DP, but they don't have the hype around them. They don't have awards, but you know that, like, they'll do a good job. They're really easy to work with. You get on well with them. Mm-hmm. And you're just... Your interaction and engagement and your working relationship with that person would be better. Like, who would you go for? The one with the hype who's going to make the better work, or the one who's better to work with?
Really good question again. Congrats to our host. Good questions today. I think the way I would answer that question is if we have a bigger production where we have the people and the money that we need, the assistance that we need, the big camera department with all the equipment that we want and we need, I would go for the one that I don't like as much, but is good, because I know that I could give him everything that he needs
or her
to shoot the thing exactly the way he's planning. If there's a project where I know that I need to, maybe it's for a very specific client, maybe it's for a client that wants a very specific thing, with a deadline, in a place never been to before, on a tricky location, I would want somebody that I trust, like 100%.
Trust in terms of they can deliver the job, or trust in the sense that you're going to get along with them?
In that case, trust is more important than getting along, which is not always the same thing.
Oh, well, that's what I mean.
Right.
I'm lost. Yeah. What are you saying? So you're saying that, because at the moment it sounds like both examples are you would go with the DP with the better work and the hype, but they're a bit of a douche to work
with. I would go with the DP with the better work and the hype if I can afford to give him what he wants and what he needs to shoot the scene the way he envisioned it. Mm-hmm. If there's a project that has maybe some of a trickier budget or a trickier location, and maybe the client is very specific, I would want somebody that I know I can trust and that I know is flexible to do the job without asking me for four or five assistants or for a driver, or for a special catering for the DP.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like totally. You'd want somebody that is, that you trust, that is flexible, and that gets that job done. So that's when I would choose somebody that maybe has less of a of the Instagram followers, but that is good, because in both cases we're talking about really good DPs.
Yeah, right? Definitely. Yeah, these are still hypothetical, like very good DPs. Not one's really shit and one's super good. They're both really good.
Yeah.
But just one of them's maybe, yeah, just a bit more in the spotlight, I suppose. Maybe they've won an award for a short film, or they've just been on a really big music video for a big artist that everyone's seen.
I do believe that the best DPs, but best directors and artists are usually the humblest. So maybe that's some material for another question. But being humble is extremely important, I think. And so when you work with people that are humble, that just makes everything easier.
Alex, man, honestly, thank you for coming on the show, man. I do appreciate it, because it's like I don't know if we really talked about it, but you've got serious jet lag right now, right?
A little bit, seven hours.
Yeah, 7 hours backwards or forwards. So you're seven hours.
Forwards. I was in Kentucky and Nashville, Kentucky and Tennessee, and then flew from Orlando over here. Slept 2 hours and straight over here to the podcast.
Straight to the Better Cinematographer podcast yes. HQ.
My favorite podcast on TV. On Spotify.
There we go. Spotify, Apple Podcast, all of that. Thank you very much. It's good to see you.
Of course,
as well.
I'll get all my DP friends to follow the podcast. And I hope that my answers were interesting for your audience. And thanks for having me so much. This has been great. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure, man. I've learned stuff, and that's like the selfish goal of these. Is like, if I learn something, then cool, and I share it, and hopefully someone, if other people learn something, then that's
exactly.
That's a little.
Thanks for having me.
All good, man. Thanks. And there we go. That's the Alex Pescosta interview. I really enjoyed that conversation. I feel like I learned a lot. As always, I hope you guys learned something. I hope there's some valuable information there for you. If you want to take a look at any of Alex's work, head over to the show notes at thebettercinematographerpodcast.com. I'll put up some links and some stills so you can take a look at the kind of projects he works on. As for the next episode of the show, episode number 6, which will be out on time. That's not good form if I'm only 5 episodes in. So from the 6th one, we'll be out on time. I give you my word. Well, maybe not my word, but, you know, I'm going to try my best. I don't want to leave you guys hanging. As for episode number 6, I don't have a guest locked in yet. I have a few people that are keen. I'm feeling like I want to get a cinematographer on the show. That wasn't really the original plan for this show. The idea was to talk to everyone but the cinematographer to learn how we can work better with the other people in production. But having chatted to a few cinematographers in the last couple of weeks, far more experienced and older and wiser cinematographers than myself, just having those conversations with them over a coffee, I learned a fuckload. So now I'm like super hyped to get them on the show and share that information with you guys. So yeah, I think we'll get a DOP, DP, cinematographer, director of photography, whatever the fuck you want to call it. We're going to get one of them on the show for episode 6. All right, you wonderful people. I will catch you on the next episode. In the meantime, if you can leave a review, subscribe, and rate the show on whatever platform you're on, that would be amazing. Thank you very much. I will see you on episode 6. Bye.